The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line is Ethan Leyline Sachs. Ethan, I've been taunting you about the ley lines, and It all came back to haunt me in the Arena Open. My Arena Open sealed open number one was Split Up, which, fine, rare. One white, destroy all tap creatures, destroy all untapped creatures. Blue ley line, green ley line, blue black land, green white land, Doomsday Excruciator, the 6BBBBBB66 flying demon, and then only really playable rare was Enduring Vitality, 1GG for the 3/3 that lets your creatures tap for mana of any color.
That's your spirit animal, this format. I feel like you've opened that a ton.
I love playing with that card. So powerful.
Yeah, no, it's very, very good. Yeah, that, but well, like you say you like got your comeuppance or whatever, but it didn't stop you, right? Isn't that the pool that you qualified with for day two?
That is the pool that I qualified with. It felt great. I played very well, beat lots of good rares, beat a Vol'Gavas Onslaught for X equals 4. I beat several Swarm Weavers. I played very, very, very well. Most frequently, my games played out with Popular Egotist. That's a 2 and a black, 3/2 that you can pay 1 and a black to give it indestructible and then sacrifice something. And then when you sacrifice something, it drains and gains. I had two of those and Brood Spinner, which is the spider that makes the 6/1/1 flying insects. And then I had
it makes it equal to your type.
Yeah, equal to your delirium. It was making six for me yesterday. Yeah, you know, Freudian slip there.
It always makes six.
Always makes six when you sacrifice it. It always did for me because I could slow the games down enough. And then I had double under the skin to rebuy those pieces. As long as my stuff didn't get exiled, which happened one game and I lost that game spectacularly. But as long as I could find those pieces and assemble them late in the game, it was a pretty hard engine to beat. But it was all commons and uncommons. Like, those were by far my best cards, those five cards, plus an Osseous Stick Twister. Have a new appreciation for that card after playing with it. But I just played really tight, had answers at the right time. Had a couple break down the doors that exiled some overlords as well. I beat the black overlord. I beat the white overlord.
Nice.
Things were running my way.
Not the rares,
but the gameplay.
And we're dropping in the middle of Arena Open Day 2 Sunday, as we often do when we record. And how's Day 2 going for you, buddy?
I am crushing 3-0 right now. Very good deck. Have Swarm Weaver and Omnivorous Flytrap, and I'm a blue-green Delirium deck. And again, just playing super well. I have played 3 insane matches. Shout out to my round one opponent, Vlad. We played an epic match. This format is just, this is a good format, but I can consistently say this has been true of all the Arena Opens. The best games of Magic I play are in the Arena Opens because you're just playing with really good drafters. Everybody's decks are a little scrappier. Everybody's playing well. The Arena Opens are excellent. So Vlad, sorry that one of us had to win. That was crazy. So 3-0 right now, hoping to get the fourth win and definitely locked for draft 2. It feels great.
Yeah, awesome. Very, very excited for you, hoping that you'll win some money, and hoping that there are folks out there who got to win some money as well this weekend as you're listening to the episode in the future.
No arena open for you, though. You got a little taste of sports ball this weekend, eh?
Yeah. My buddy was in town, so he took me and a few of our friends to go see the Cal versus Pitt game, my first time at a big boy, you know, because they play at, you know, what used to be Heinz Field is now Acrisure Stadium. They play at the Steelers Stadium. And so it's my first time there. I think like other than Super Bowls, that's the first time I've like watched a football game in its entirety. And it was fun. It's a lot of breaks. I feel like people complain about baseball being a slow game. Football is a slow game.
Yeah, there's about like 25 minutes of actual action on the field, maybe less than that. I don't know.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. But yeah, I had a good time. It was very close, but Pitt is still on there. Now they're 6-0 this season, so pretty crazy. I will not be following up. Please do not ask me on future weeks how Pitt is doing.
The local was not rooting for Pitt, if anyone was wondering. He was rooting for Cal Berkeley.
Yeah, right. My friend went to Cal Berkeley, so we were the five people in the stadium cheering for Cal. And we lost, but it was a close game. It was fun. Very, very excited to cheer you on later today. But for now, we got some stuff to talk about. I mean, I'm just like, again, feel like there's so much to discuss. Like, there's just a lot of cards I want to chat about. I want to just check in on how we're navigating some drafts. So we're going to just be doing some more, I think, kind of big picture conversations, dialing in on some cards, but just talking about how we're engaging in the format. And I think looking at some underrated cards is going to give us an opportunity to just talk about maybe some play patterns, some deck building things, some preferences, all that good stuff.
Yeah, for sure. This format is so deep. And just getting to play, I've been playing best of three almost exclusively the last week. And then the open, obviously best of three. Getting to sideboards, we maybe need to do a sideboarding episode about this format because it matters so much as well, like just changing your deck or citing out X1s against Fear of Lost Teeth, or there's all kinds of stuff that comes up in sideboarding. It's been very interesting in the open today, sideboarding and kind of the duel of who's going to sideboard what, how.
I'd love to talk. Yeah, that'd be a great thing. I know we have your open draft log here, but maybe we just dial in on the changes you've been making in your deck now that you're kind of tuned into that. But getting ahead of ourselves, let's do a little bit of housekeeping. First things first is the Patreon page, patreon.com/lordsoflimited, is where folks can go to give back to the show. We will be changing up those tiers in just a couple weeks. But if you want to go get in on the action right now, the Discord is hopping and popping. That's what everybody who gives back via the Patreon gets access to. Would highly encourage you to check that out and to get in on the conversations that are happening. Arena Open weekend is great. That's behind us now, but we've got the qualifier weekend next week is sealed. So if you want to get in on that, get some feedback on your sealed pool, et cetera, or, you know, it doesn't have to be tied to a big event, you know, it can just be tied to, I want to get in touch with my Lords of Limited community. I want to get in touch with Ethan and Ben. I want to get in touch with other folks who are as obsessed with Limited as me. Well, that's the place to do it. Some other perks as you move up the reward tiers there. And we want to shout out our new patrons the first week that they join. This week, we're welcoming Yeman Sun, Blake, Brian, Joseph, Derek, Matthew, Espen, and Max. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Yeah, cannot say thank you enough. We've also got Magic Fest Vegas coming up that neither you nor I
is
going to be at, unfortunately, but that was very cool being at the Magic Fest in January and being able to connect with Lords of Limited folks. And I assume there will be multiple Lords of Limited Discord folks going to Magic Fest Vegas, trying to connect that way. And hopefully the schedule is kind to the band schedule for the Magic Fest next year in 2025, because I am itching to go back.
Yeah, we definitely have to make an appearance at one next year. And I really want to make sure I can do Vegas next year. Personally, I know if it's in October, that's basically never going to happen for you just because of how band schedule works for you. Your fall is usually packed to the brim. And also, but before Vegas, next week is KubeCon, which I will be at and I will be commentating. So if you are tuning in to KubeCon, give us a shout. Come watch me do some coverage. That's going to be fun. And if you're at KubeCon, definitely be sure. You know, I've got my coverage stint every day, but then the rest of the time I'm hoping to just be getting in the streets and doing some drafts with folks. So please come and say hi if you're there.
Yeah, I've got some serious FOMO about KubeCon. It's gonna be a bummer watching all of that on Twitter and getting updates from you. We also need to shout out the Lords of Limited YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok. And it's just huge shout out to you so that you don't have to toot your own horn. Congratulations on 10K for the Lords of Limited YouTube channel. And that says Lords of Limited YouTube channel. That is Ethan's YouTube channel with the Lords of Limited name tag. And you've been putting tons of work into it, and you deserve the 10K. So if you're not following on Lords of Limited on YouTube, it's at youtube.com/@LordsOfLimited. We've got 10K subs now. You're posting videos probably bi-weekly, maybe more than that. Show is up there with a video version of the show. So if you're interested in that and aren't checking it out, check that out. There's draft videos going up. Tons of good stuff happening there.
Yeah, we have. I will say, I'm not putting you on the spot. Just wanted to let you know if you're not checking the comments. We've gotten some love and requests for some Ben videos on there. I know that YouTubing is not your preferred medium, but if you ever feel like throwing something up on the channel, I will be happy to edit and post it on your behalf. And yeah, we have an Instagram account now and a TikTok account. So if you're on those platforms, you can find us at Lords of Limited. We're posting the podcast shorts that we do on YouTube there. So give us a like and a follow if you're on those platforms as well. How do you want to kick things off? Do you want to look at a draft log? Do you want to just start talking about cards? Do you want to just talk about your basket in the glow of your 3-0 in the Arena Open? What do you want to do?
The glow is going to last a long time, so okay. We can save that. I'm into checking in on a draft log. Let's check in on your draft log. I think this is a very interesting one.
So yeah, I posted this just because I was like, I feel like I'm even looking at this now. There's just lots of options in a number of picks, and I think this will be a good springboard for some conversations about the format. So the cards in pack one, pick one that I think the pick comes down to. The only common in consideration is Scorching Dragonfire, the 2-mana deal 3. But there's 3 really strong uncommons in my mind. One is Razorkin Hordecaller. That's the 5-mana 4/4 haste in red. Whenever you attack, you get a 1/1 red gremlin creature token. And then right off the bat, there's a decision, right? Of like red card versus red card. So where are you in Scorching Dragonfire versus Razorkin Hordecaller?
Oh, Dragonfire, not particularly close for me.
Wow. See, I think I'm Team Hordecaller.
I just don't want to start with a 5-drop. There are so many good 5-drops in this format.
Yeah, like Razorkin Hordecaller.
Like Razorkin Hordecaller. I want to start with a 2-drop interactive spell that exiles, baby. That is where it's at.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. They're very close for me. It seems like they're not close for you. And then 2 other good uncommons. You already shouted this card out. That's the Osseous Stick Twister, 1 and a black, 2/2 lifelink. And then if you have Delirium in your end step, it's got the like Punisher effect where your opponent either has to sack an on-land permanent, discard a card, or you deal 2 damage to them and you gain 2 life. And Glimmer Seeker, the 3-mana 3/3 in white that has survival, make a glimmer, and then if you already have a glimmer, you draw a card. And then, of course, I should shout out the rare in the pack is the blue ley line, because that's just bread and butter for me in terms of my pack one, pick one opens. Okay, so comes down to then, if we've already discussed the 2 red cards for you, Scorching Dragonfire versus Stick Twister versus Glimmer Seeker.
Yeah, to me, it's Dragonfire versus Stick Twister. Glimmer Seeker is significantly less good than those two in my mind. And I think I just, not that Hordecaller and Dragonfire aren't close. It's like a close but clear situation for me where
gotcha.
If I already have some Dragonfires, maybe I'm taking a Hordecaller over it later in the draft. But my decks that have done the best are very good at interacting with what my opponent's doing.
Yeah.
So I value that pretty highly. That being said, I've played with Stick Twister a ton the last like 3 days. And I have had a blast playing with it. I think I would take Stick Twister over Dragonfire here as a bit of a meta pick, because I think black is underappreciated right now. Like, I think that it's good. Like, is it the worst of the 5? Sure, but like everything's so close in this format, and you can actually get an edge, I think, by going into the underappreciated archetypes right now. And I've played red a lot. I just don't feel like fighting over red with people. And I think the black decks are also more interesting to draft. So I think even on the open day one, I think if this were that, I would still take Stick Twister. This isn't like I just am tired of drafting red. I think Stick Twister gives you the most equity right now today on October 13th.
Yeah, I think that checks out for me as well. I had the same feeling. I was like, these feel close to me, all of these cards. I agree with you. I think the Glimmer Seeker is probably the 4th of these, but I've been really impressed by Glimmer Seeker. And if you wanted to draft a white deck, I think you could just take Glimmer Seeker. I don't think there is, I mean, maybe you disagree, but I don't think there's a pick here where you're like, well, you're really like making, like you said, you're making a meta call or whatever to take Stick Twister over Dragonfire. Like, no, they're just close. And I think it's just more about like, one, what do you want to do or what do you feel like navigating in terms of what are other people going to be drafting, but also just like, what do you want to get into? And I really like the black decks right now. I mean, obviously we talked about black red last week, and to your point about removal, I had two draft videos ended up in red black, and in two spots, you know, I talked about how I felt like the one drops percussionist and Fear of Lost Teeth are like the kindling for that deck. And I think they're so, so important to have. And I took them, I think I took a percussionist over a Final Vengeance twice. And then both times at the end of the draft, regretted that. And so I think that's a little switch I'm going to have to make, is just bumping up. Like maybe like, yeah, they're important, but they're not more important than Final Vengeance is. Final Vengeance is so important. It's another reason to really like getting into black, is you get that amazing removal spell at common.
Yes, and at common late, because it's a very specific type of deck that gets to use it.
Yeah.
Okay, I do think Glimmer Seeker would be a mistake, for what it's worth. I think it's Dragonfire versus Stick Twister, and only Glimmer Seeker if you really want to draft white, but I don't know why you'd really want to draft white. Like, Glimmer Seeker, to me, is not good enough to want to start down the path of white, because I feel like white gives you the least opportunity to leverage draft skill. Like, you're basically signing up to draft blue-white or red-white, which are pretty highly contested archetypes. And yes, you can do black-white, but that's more of a black deck than it is a white deck base.
Yeah, I agree with that. Okay, cool. So we both land on Stick Twister here. And then I think the picks the next two packs are fairly straightforward or fairly clear to me. Like, pack one, pick two, there's a Sheltered by Ghosts, and that is far and away the best card in the pack. The one in a white aura that exiles something and gives the enchanted creature that you put this on +1/+0, lifelink, and ward 2. Like, you're just not, there's nothing here that you would even remotely consider taking, right?
Correct.
Okay, so take Sheltered by Ghosts, pick 2. And then pick 3, I think the same thing happens, where there's just like a clear best card and then a bunch of nonsense. And that's Under the Skin, the 2 and a green, manifest dread, and then return a permanent card from your graveyard to your hand.
Yeah, I completely agree. And of these three cards right now, where are you leaning towards? Like, what is your gut telling you you're most likely to end up from here?
It feels like the most likely path that I will take in this draft where I get to play all three of these cards would be black, green, splash, white.
Right. And even if you're not splashing white, I think base black, green is what you're hoping to be with these three cards now.
Correct. Yeah. Right. Because, I mean, Stick Twister wanting Delirium, Under the Skin playing well in the graveyard space as well. And also black, green, it's trivially easy usually for black, green to splash. And so if I end up wanting to splash Sheltered by Ghosts, that probably will be doable.
Yep.
Okay. So then with those three cards in your pile, pack one, pick four, stumped. To this day, stumped about what to do. Curious to hear your thoughts. Lot of options, I think. There's a Terramorphic Expanse. There's a Glimmer Light, the artifact that makes a 1/1 glimmer. There's Say Its Name, the mill 3 and then grab a creature or land out of your yard. There's Growing Dread as like a manifest dread follow-up to Under the Skin, the green-blue flash enchantment, manifest dread, turn a permanent face up, put a counter on it. And there's also Conductive Machete, the 4-mana equipment, the manifest dread, equip creature gets +2/+1 and has an equip cost of 4. All of those cards were cards that I was thinking about.
Yes, I think all of them rightly so. I think Conductive Machete is just better than Glimmerlight. And I agree, it's tough to know what's right here. I'm not particularly interested in splashing Sheltered by Ghosts in a black-green deck. And I very much want to be black-green at the moment. So I think I would just take Conductive Machete as a way to defer the decision down the road here. I think it is the most powerful card that keeps you the most open.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Where are you at, like, in terms of, maybe I don't think Conductive Machete is as powerful as you, because I part of me feels the way you were feeling about Horde Caller of like, I'm like, it's 4 mana. And like, yeah, it delays the decision, air quotes, but like, I'm not going to end up in white green playing Conductive Machete, probably. Like, I'm still trying to end up in black green at this point.
Sure, but I also think it's the best card for black green because you get a manifest dread, you get a bin something, it's an artifact, which is a tough type to come by while upping your creature count. And it's less small ball than Glimmerlight. Like, I'm not interested in playing Glimmerlight particularly in my black green decks, but I am in for Conductive Machete as like a little beefier thing. Plus, you tend to end up with a lot of small things running around in black and turning your 1/1s and 2/2s into 4/3s later in the game. It just helps you grind out the game a little bit more, I think.
Yeah. I think, honestly, I forget if this was on stream or on a video, but I think if I wasn't a coward, if I was just drafting in the dark alone by myself, I would have taken Terramorphic Expanse here. But I feel like it's too, like, you don't have to take it this early. Like, it's a card that I really want to make sure I end up with, probably because I'm going to be splashing, or I'm thinking about splashing Shelter by Ghosts more than you are. I landed on Say Its Name because I was like, I feel like this plays well in the Stick Twister, Under the Skin, Delirium, Get Back a Thing space because it mills three. And I think I just generally am undervaluing this card, but I still don't know. You're selling me on the Machete right now.
I like Machete, but I don't think any of those cards are crazy. Say Its Name is going to be fine. If you end up in black green, it'll be very good. I don't like taking Say Its Name quite that aggressively until I have a card I really want to get back.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. And then pack one, pick five. Really interesting because there's still some very powerful cards here. There is Scorching Dragonfire still here, which doesn't feel great. There's Trapped in the Screen still here, which does feel great because it's, you know, a card and a color that we have and another excellent card of. And there's also Splitskin Doll, the one and a white 2/1. When it enters, you draw a card and then you discard a card unless you control another creature with power 2 or less. I feel like I'm going to get a slap on the wrist here.
Well, it's interesting. I remember opening this log 3 days ago when you made the show notes. Uh-huh. And I remember thinking, wow, I would have taken a totally different route than Ethan through this draft. Because I think that day I started with Scorching Dragonfire.
You didn't like Stick Twister.
I didn't first pick Stick Twister. Uh-huh. And I first picked Scorching Dragonfire. And I ended up much more in the red-white aggro space in my mind when I went through the draft log mentally. But when you first pick Stick Twister, it really changes. And I was thinking that was a mistake then when I looked at the log, and I don't now after playing the Stick Twister more. So I think this, for me, again, here with what you've got right now today, which is Under the Skin, Say Its Name, Sheltered by Ghosts, and Stick Twister, it's got to be between Trapped in the Screen and Splitskin Doll. And I think I would take Trapped in the Screen here just as a premium interactive card. Splitskin Doll's fine, but it's ultimately nothing to write home about outside of red, white, or blue.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think I leveled myself just slightly here because I was like, I really like good two drops are hard to come by. Splitskin Doll is an excellent two drop. And it's got types if we're ending up doing like Abzan, Delirium, Reanimate, whatever, like graveyard stuff with Say Its Name and Under the Skin. But I think ultimately I just needed to take Trapped in the Screen because this is now, you know, I have the Sheltered by Ghosts, which is not honestly at its best in a late game deck. Like you, Sheltered by Ghosts is best in an aggro deck where by the time they have something to answer the creature, it's too late. Still fine. I still think worth splashing for and worth playing whenever, but obviously going to be less good. And I think passing up on a, as you said, premium exile removal spell here in Trapped in the Screen is probably wrong.
Well, and I'm still, whether we took Say Its Name or Machete last pick, I'm still hoping to be black green, but Trapped in the Screen is something I'm interested in splashing.
Yes.
In black green compared to Sheltered by Ghosts, also because it can be picked up by Under the Skin if it gets killed or milled.
Yeah. And then pack one, pick six, more options, which is just really cool. We now have like, what, four of these six picks? Like, sure, the Sheltered by Ghosts and the Under the Skin picks feel like pretty face up. The other ones, I'm just like, looking at it now, I'm like, I don't know. I still just don't know. Because I just think you can do a lot of different things in this draft. So there's another Glimmer Light in this pack one, pick six. There's a Final Vengeance, the black removal spell that exiles something and you have to sacrifice a creature and enchantment to cast it. There's Break Down the Door, the Tuna Green exile artifact enchantment or manifest dread. And there's Shroud Stomper, the big bad reanimation target, the 5/5 death touch. When it enters or attacks, each opponent loses 2 life, you gain 2 life and draw a card.
Yeah, I like your pick of Shroud Stomper here with where you're at. And then I think whether you took Splitskin Doll or Trapped in the Screen, Shroud Stomper, I think at least gives you a direction, which we're kind of looking for, and splits the difference between stuff. You could go black-white reanimator, truly, from here, and abandon ship on your green cards. Or if green flows and you pick up the fixing, you could be an Abzan reanimator deck, which I have seen quite a bit recently the last few days, and they've been impressive.
Yeah, yeah. And that, so I did take Shroud Stomper, and I think probably it might change. Like, if you don't have Say Its Name, I guess if you don't have Say Its Name, then you have one less green card, which makes Shroud Stomper even more appealing, I suppose.
Right.
Yeah, but I was thinking, I've got Say Its Name, I've got Under the Skin, You know, I've got Split Skin Doll that can bin Shroud Stomper if I'm reanimating it, whatever. So I did take that. I, like I said, I talked about this, I think, a couple weeks ago. I think Shroud Stomper is just an excellent card. I think I was underrated it going into the format and have since calibrated. It's a really nice card. And I did end up in basically black-green, but an aggressive white splash for Shroud Stomper. And this is not an Ethan deck. I've got a Ghostly Dancers here. 5-mana 2/5 flyer. I've got a Valgavoth's Onslaught here in this deck. So yeah, really nice. Just really full on Abzan deck. And my fixing is good. I've got triple Terramorphic Expanse, a green-white duel, a black-white duel, threats around every corner, double say its name to find lands. Like, this deck was really, really fun. I had a newfound appreciation for Altanac with Terramorphic Expanse. Like, just the fact that you get to go crack Expanse on one and then Altanac discard is Rampant Growth on two. I don't think I've ever done that before, and it's really good.
It's also really good to reanimate a 9/9 trample that then, like, you're going to draw a card, and then if they kill it and they don't exile it, you can reanimate it again. That was my round three, was like my opponent played Altanac like four times in one of our games. I had to grind through it. It was totally ridiculous. But there's an alternate world where you first pick Dragonfire, you take Sheltered by Ghosts, you take Under the Skin, and then you're like a little unhappy, but you're probably still taking Machete there or Glimmer Light. Either one of those is fine. And then you're taking Split Skin Doll or Dragonfire, and then you're taking Ragged Playmate, and then you're taking Most Valuable Slayer. Like, I think if you first pick Dragonfire, it's pretty easy to get into red-white. But that's also why I don't like first picking Dragonfire, because I just feel like you get pushed towards that deck. And I think that deck loses a lot in best of three.
Well, and the other thing that you're right about, that you can make those picks, where the split happens for me is on the wheel, just is non-existent for red white basically, whereas like I actually get some nice pickups for my deck. You know, I get a Winner's Intervention versus Derelict Attic pick 9. I get a Cracked Skull pick 10. Like, whereas if you're red white, you're taking like a friendly Teddy or Attack in the Box, you know?
Sure. Well, that's the benefit of the Stick Twister that we talked about, pack one, pick one, is that you expect to have less competition for your deck, I think, at this point, first picking Stick Twister than first picking Dragonfire.
Right. Yeah. Spark something uncommon this holiday season with incredible hand-picked gifts from Uncommon Goods.
Oh no. Did you say gifts? Holiday season? Already?
I know we are not big on gift giving here at Lords of Limited, but that's why Uncommon Goods is such a great option.
That's true. They make shopping a breeze by scouring the globe for original handmade gifts that'll give you that "it's exactly what I wanted" feeling.
Absolutely. I found this really cool dinosaur-shaped utensils and plate set that I think Jonah is really going to love.
It's a great pick. I've been browsing the home decor section of the website for myself, and it's given me a lot of inspiration for different ways to spruce up the old house.
And when you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting small businesses with many products made in small batches. They have unique gifts for everyone, from dinner party hosts to sports fans.
And every purchase gives back $1 to a nonprofit of your choice. To date, they've donated over $3 million.
So, if you're ready to find something extraordinary and get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/LOL.
That's uncommongoods.com/LOL for 15% off.
Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary. So, you know, the title of the episode, Unlocking a Card's Potential here, is, I was sort of thinking about, because I get questions about some sort of like the cards that I play that are perhaps not the most desirable cards in the world, but I feel like there's so much more than just win rate. And this is not an episode to we're not poo-pooing data here. That's not the point of the episode. The point of the episode is just to sort of like think outside of the box with some of these cards and like where they have homes. Cause I feel like some of the, you know, low rated cards in the format, I'm like, oh, I actually like playing these in specific spots. And I feel like these conversations will just give us a chance to talk about where we're at with the set right now.
Yeah, I'm into it.
Before those, though, I have just a short list of commons that I want to check in on. One of them is doing quite well in the game and hand win rate department, and that is Vanish from Sight, the 4-mana blue spell that tops or bottoms a creature, and then you get to surveil one. This is not a card I ever want to play personally. Can you what am I missing about this card? Because it seems extremely replaceable to me. But like, you know, my rule is like, if a card's win rate is good, that probably means it's good.
It's fine. It doesn't pull you into blue at
all. How is this card performing better than Unable to Scream? I can't imagine ever being in blue and picking Vanished Assault over Unable to Scream. That is a thought I'm having a hard time wrestling with.
Yeah, that's nonsense. I don't care about that at all. Okay. Unable to Scream is definitely better. But Vanished from Sight, there's some cute play patterns with it where you can do it in response to a fetch or in response to a manifest, and that kind of messes your opponent's life up a little bit. The best thing about it is that it plays really well with the other blue commons that you want to play, which is Glimmer, whatever, the three and a blue instant speed, draw two cards, make a 1/1 Glimmer. And also the one blue counterspell, the twisted whatever, the counter target
twist
spell.
Twist reality,
or Manifest Dread. Those three cards in tandem, if you've got packages of those cards, and again, you probably don't need to pick Vanish from Sight highly in that situation, but the package of those three cards and multiples of them makes your opponent's life really hard when you pass up with four blue mana. Like, if they don't want to stick their best thing because they have to play around Twist Reality. And then if they hedge too much, you can draw two cards and make a Glimmer. Mm-hmm. Or if they play something you need to deal with, it makes your opponent's decisions very difficult, I think, is the best thing I can say about those packages. Vanish from Sight as an individual card, have not been that impressed with. But surrounded by those other cards and instant speed stuff, it has been nice.
That makes sense to me. It's hard for me. Those are all cards like Glimmer Burst. I like the draw spell. The other cards I'm not crazy about, so it's hard for me to imagine.
But once you like Glimmer Burst, you also want the other cards because you want to make your opponent's life difficult.
Yeah, that's fair. Speaking of Glimmer Burst, the other draw spell that I think we perhaps have a mea culpa about, because we came in, I think, after early access saying that we thought Meat Locker Drowned Diner was better than Glimmer Burst. There's no way you think that now, right? I think Meatlocker is extremely replaceable.
I don't. I just think they're different cards, which is why this format is amazing. Mm-hmm. There's decks that want Meatlocker Drown Diner over Glimmer Burst. If you've got a Fear of Loneliness or whatever it's called, where you can pick up a card, there's too many fears.
Fear of Isolation.
Fear of Isolation. See,
yeah, Loneliness. You were pretty close.
I was close. to pick it up and then draw three again. Or if you care about rooms, you're going to want Meatlocker Drown Diner over
Glimmer Burst.
What is it called? Glimmer Burst. Yeah, there's too many glimmers. There's too many fears.
You're struggling here.
I am struggling. I'm dialed in on what the cards do right now. Yeah. The arena open still. I'm locked in. Ain't nobody got time for card names when you're playing good Magic.
I just think both halves, like, it's hard because I don't think a lot of blues, maybe blue-white, like, I just don't think Meat Locker is that effective of a card.
And yeah, I think it is. It's so long.
Two turns.
It's forever.
Two stun counters.
Yeah. And it doesn't take the thing off the battlefield, which is also annoying for the decks that care about pulling stuff back out of the graveyard. Meat Locker buys you a lot of time.
Okay.
And when you're ahead, two turns is a long time when you're beating down. I have come down on it from our initial episode. I agree, but I wouldn't go so far as to say mea culpa. I think it is a comparable card to Glimmer Burst, and I think Glimmer Burst is probably better in the abstract, but there's definitely a substantial amount of decks that would want one versus the other, and I think knowing that is one of the interesting things in this format.
Okay. Innocuous Rat, one in a black 1/1, when it dies, Manifest Dread.
Card's terrible.
That's what I think too. I think this card is terrible. And I think I should have had this in the underperformer category when I was talking about red black, because I've been getting some, you know, people being like, you know, thanks for the check and whatever, or like, this red black didn't do so well. What do you think about it? Innocuous Rat, I think, is part of the problem a lot of the time. Like, it's sort of how I've felt. I really do like Glimmerlight a lot. I really don't like playing Glimmerlight on turn two if I can help it at all. Like, playing a 1/1 on turn for two mana on turn two is really bad. That's what I think. And I think Innocuous Rat, like, there are some times where it's basically just about the card quality of my deck. Like, do I have busted creatures to get? You know, do I have something that I really want to dig towards? Sure, Manifest Dread. I guess if I have some Final Vengeances and I need Sack Fodder, sure. But basically, if I can help it, I would rather have other cards in that spot.
Yes.
Horrid Vigor. One in a green. Creature gets indestructible and death touch until end of turn.
I don't like it. I have never played it. It's gotten me a couple times.
But it gets me. I, I, yeah. like, you know, you never see the times where it's like stuck in your opponent's hand and it doesn't do anything or whatever. But I do feel like it's exclusively just gotten me. And I'm wondering if this is another card where I'm like, maybe I should start putting this in decks.
I don't think so. I think the only time I would play it is if I needed instant count higher in green delirium decks. This is just not what green's about as a color generally. Like maybe in red green. I don't know. I just can't imagine ever putting this card, and maybe green white, but I just don't want to play green white. I can't imagine ever wanting this card in green black or green blue. There's just better instants to get your delirium count higher. You just want removal spells.
That's what I think too. All right.
Well, great. It's been decided.
I was trying to see if I was missing something. All right, what's the last card? It's not common, but what's the card you want to check in? The
card I want to check in on is Fear of Abduction. 4WW for a 5/5 flyer. As an additional cost to cast it, exile a creature you control. When it enters, exile target creature an opponent controls. And when it leaves the battlefield, put each card exiled with it into its owner's hand. I cannot, to this day, tell you how good this card is. I feel like I have a very good handle on the format and you kind of the weighted scales of how I value the cards against each other. And then even once you start putting multiples up against each other, I have no idea about this card. I was panicked about having to draft this card in the Arena Open today. And it's partially why I didn't want to start white. I feel the least comfortable drafting white and knowing how to value white's cards outside of white, red, and blue, white. And this is such a weird card. Like you can kind of hard cast it. It's kind of, you could say, well, it's a reanimate only card, but I don't think that's true either. I just have no idea.
I don't like this card personally. And I have played with it a fair amount this past week, or I should say more than I would like in retrospect. I haven't played it in Reanimator, so I could see that part of it. But as like Curve Topper in blue, white or whatever, you just get put in some awkward spots. And if you don't have ways to protect it, like it dies to a lot of much cheaper stuff and then they get their thing back. So you have to sort of like, you're not exiling their best thing or a thing with an ETB or, you know, like, because you're a little worried. And then you're also like, well, what do I want to do? I want to remove an actual thing so that then I get it back when they kill it, or do I remove just a glimmer? And I've also been in spots where I'm like, it's turn 5. And I can't chump block with my glimmer because it's my only creature and I'm waiting to cast Fear of Abduction next turn. That also feels bad. I think I'm just kind of out on it personally.
Interesting. Like that's kind of how I've felt about it too. Like I've definitely experienced the unable to chump thing because you have this as your 6-mana play in a deck that wants to cast it. But it's also been insanely powerful against me too.
Yes, like, I've died
played
to
against it.
Yeah.
So that I just don't know where to, like, it doesn't pull me into white, I don't think, but I'm worried that I'm underrating it.
Yeah. I don't know. It's really expensive. Like you're not taking it over. I mean, this is a gimme, I guess, but you're not taking it over Trapped in the Screen like ever. Right.
Right. Yeah. Okay. That's a good way to contextualize it.
Yeah. So I just don't think it's that good.
Okay. Today's episode is brought to you by Turtle Beach, the number one brand in gaming headsets and accessories.
Their new Gen 3 Stealth 700 headset is incredible. I'm telling you, it picks up sound so crystal clear. This week, I second picked a piggy bank in a draft video and was visibly shocked by the loud oink that came through my headset when I picked it.
And if you're gaming beyond Arena, you'll hear every footstep, every reload, every enemy sneaking up on you like they're wearing tap shoes in your living room.
And let's talk about comfort. These headsets are so soft and light. I've been using the Stealth 700 for a few weeks now, and I have to say it's a total game changer. The sound quality is a massive upgrade from my old headset.
And the battery life is insane. Talking 80 hours with quick charge. We've had to pause recording before with Ethan's old headset because it died in the middle of the episode.
Facts. Plus, the Stealth 700 has the industry's first ever cross-play dual wireless transmitter system. That means you can switch between consoles and PC with just a click.
And it's not just headsets. Turtle Beach has every gaming accessory you could ever want, all high quality and reasonably priced. They're the ultimate cheat code for gamers.
Whether you're a casual gamer or you haven't touched grass in weeks, Turtle Beach has the perfect headset for you.
Get the ultimate immersive gaming experience with Turtle Beach today. Remember, for a limited time, head to turtlebeach.com and use code LOL for 10% off your entire order.
That's 10% off your order at turtlebeach.com with promo code LOL. Level up your gaming with Turtle Beach. So we got a list here of some underrated cards. And this is underrated, I think, you know, using game in hand win rate as a baseline, just sort of check in, like, what's going on with some cards that maybe we've had some good experiences with or situational experiences with that some folks are not taking, that are kind of whipping around the table sometimes. First up on this list, have you had a chance to play with Demonic Council? The other thing that this lets us do is talk about some rares, and we just like don't get to do other than, you know, ley lines and pack one, pick ones. So Demonic Council is the 2-mana sorcery that searches up a demon, unless you have Delirium, and then it's just Demonic Tutor, searches up any card. Have you played this?
I've not played it yet, but I've taken it hoping to get to play it, and it's not quite panned out. I can see it get it having potential, especially if you get the, one of the things I've really liked is that ritual card that's the room that makes a demon and then drains two, gains two.
Oh, yeah.
You got the demon. Having a Miasma Demon as a backup demon for that card has been pretty nice, and I've wanted Demonic Council in spots where I've had that and not had the chance to pick it up, and I've taken it optimistically hoping that sort of stuff would come together, but I have not cast it yet.
Yeah, that's the thing that I wanted to point out, is that Demonic Council, you know, black decks get Delirium generally. Like, you know, if you build your deck correctly, and black is like often a late game color, and getting Delirium is doable in that color, like, this is going to be a good card there. The thing that I wanted to shout out is what you've sort of half mentioned, which is that there's two uncommon demons in Miasma Demon. That's the 6-mana 5/4 that can discard stuff to give a creature -2/-2. And then Vile Mutilator, the 7-mana 6/5 that, you know, you sack something and then they sack a non-token enchantment and creature. Those are demons. There's just a like greater than the sum of its parts thing that happens where like you get to put a tutor in your deck, and you also want to make sure you have, like, do you have a Valgavoth's Onslaught? Do you have something like powerful that you're like, oh, I definitely want a second copy of that? Then that makes Demonic Council get better. And then, but as a failsafe of whatever, like, I'm not at Delirium yet, I've got this thing in my hand, then you can, like, it's not a dead card if you don't have Delirium when you have some demons in your deck.
Yeah, I'm into it. Next up is Walk-in Closet, Forgotten Cellar. I have played both of these cards.
Nice.
So Walk-in Closet is, you can play land cards from your graveyard for 3-mana, it's a room, and then Forgotten Cellar is the other half. 5-mana when you unlock it. You can cast spells from your graveyard this turn. If a card would be put into your graveyard from anywhere this turn, exile it instead. I've not done well with it, but I've had fun playing with it. I've played it in tandem with cards like Terramorphic Expanse to naturally put lands in the yard, as well as Head Shredder, that type of stuff, Mill, Say Its Name. You want to be able to dump lands into your yard incidentally. The problem is all of that is a lot of do nothing. And then also when I start drafting these kinds of cards, I start just picking cards that I want to have fun with. I have played more 50 card decks in this format than I think I have in any format in a long time. Like, I've probably played 5+ 50 card decks at least.
Wow. Just because, like, is that a, I think this is right for self mill, or I don't feel like making cuts?
That one, the latter. Like, it's just been like, I want all these cards and I want to see how they work together.
You get end of the draft, you have 46 cards. So you're just like, I just add 4 lands and we're good.
Yeah, well, and there is a bit of a thing when you start playing with cards like this where you need cards to enable cards in this format. And like, if you try to do too many things, which is what I do when I end up with 50 cards, like, I either have to cut an entire package of cards that support a card, which I don't want to do.
Right.
Or things just start not working if I cut it down to 40. So I just roll with 50 and I usually 2-3 and it's very fun.
Yeah. Walk-in Closet. I kind of get why this is pretty low in the dumpster of win rates. But I do think Terramorphic Expanse, I think, is the real key to this card being good. And you mentioned another card that's on this list that I am shocked is low, which is Head Shredder. That's the vehicle, the 4-mana 5/5 crew 1. Anytime a land is put into your graveyard from your library, you can put it into play. And then when it attacks, you can mill 2. I don't get this. Like, just this is an efficient body. It's like a good type. It has synergy with green graveyard decks. If you have like vehicles with survival creatures is just broken. Like, I don't understand how this is not, this doesn't do well.
I've played with it a fair amount. It is awkward in that, to enable it, you have to play cards that aren't creatures. And then all of that is a lot of do nothing. So a lot of times the green decks, I mean, like, if you're playing things that dump lands into the yard naturally, that's do nothing. And Hedge Shredder's also do nothing the turn that you cast it, unless you have a creature. And if you have a creature, I mean, it's a 5/5, but to turn it on, you have to attack. It has been awkward for me. I've played this card a fair amount, and I'm lower on it. I think I would take Lightning Strike or whatever it's called over it. Scorching Dragonfire. Continuing my trend with premium
then
card names.
Then knowing cards in the names in the format challenge level impossible.
I said Scorching Dragonfire.
Scorching Dragonfire over Hedge Shredder. Dang. Okay.
There's a long list of commons, I think, at this point that I would first pick over Scorching or over Hedge Shredder.
Wow. Yeah, I have found this. I have not run into this card being awkward that much. I've found it to be, yeah, just really, really good. The Do Nothing Life could be a qualifier for a number of these cards. I know you got a chance to play with Charred Foyer Warped Space. This is a mythic room. Charred Foyer says at the beginning of your upkeep, exile the top card of your library. You can play it this turn, and then Warped Space lets you basically cast a card from exile each turn for free.
There's a lot of cards like this on this list, and I think I love Charred Foyer Warped Space. I think specifically for Charred Foyer, however you say it. But I think all of these cards that are card advantage engines just come with the caveat that you can't do nothing. Like, you have to prioritize defensive speed, you have to prioritize interaction. But once you check those boxes, Charred Foyer is a great win condition for your deck for 4 mana. I mean, if you're drawing 2 cards a turn for 4 mana, mm-hmm. it's very, very strong and very hard for most decks to deal with. I like this card. You just have to be conscious of your early game when you draft it.
And is there... So certainly conscious of your early game, do you feel like when you see this card, is there a color pair that you're thinking like, this is where it'll be at its best?
Probably red-black, just because you get so much removal. I've really liked red-black control decks.
Yeah, red-black control. I think like it's probably... And red-black control, or I guess red-green control, like red-green splash is probably where I think this card is at its best. I honestly feel like red-blue probably... like. Red blue just has a glut of these kinds of things. Like, you can, your incremental advantage cards in red blue are a dime a dozen, right? You can get 2-for-1s, 3-for-1s that don't affect the board however you like. And so I don't think Charred Foyer is that important there. And obviously in red white aggro, you don't need this card.
Correct. Next up, we've got Greenhouse and Rickety Gazebo. So Greenhouse is the one that lets you tap your lands for mana of any color. Rickety Gazebo is the 4 mana. Unlock the door, mill 4 cards, and return up to 2 permanent cards from among them to your hand. I am a little lower on this card. I played with it quite a bit in the beginning of the format.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a little too do nothing for me, while also not being quite powerful enough to make up for the do nothing.
So, like, thinking about this probably solely in green-black or whatever, Sultai, Delirium, that's where it's at its best. Do you just feel like, well, say its name does it better?
That, but what you're talking about here, what you wrote down here makes sense to me. I just haven't used it in that sense. Like, I think I've been using it wrong, which is why I don't like it. Like, I've primarily been using this as a greenhouse to turn on, like, 5-color shenanigans
decks.
Oh, yeah,
that's wild.
Yeah, so I think what you put here is that it's a card velocity, like, helps get you towards Delirium, helps you maybe if you accidentally mill one of your good things, which is the problem with some of those cards, you can pick them back up with their permanents, and does pop off with Defiled Crypt Cadaver Lab, which is the single black return a creature to your hand, or the 3 in a black room that when something leaves your graveyard, you get a 2/2 zombie.
Yeah, I mean, that card is like my spirit animal in the format. That's on this list as well. Its best friend is Ghost Vacuum, the rare 1-mana artifact that pulls something out of a graveyard, and then you can crack
it. That's another card that should be on this list. How good is Ghost Vacuum?
Great question. I think, like, I mean, honestly, I think if you're thinking about it like something for you to use rather than hosing your opponent, I think you're thinking about it in the Defiled Crypt Cadaver Lab space. It's basically a black card. Because that, with that, the reason it's so good is, like, Defiled Crypt only makes a 2/2 once per turn. And so Ghost Vacuum gives the opportunity, like, you're doing, like, whatever, you cast Say Its Name, trigger Defiled Crypt to get something out of the yard. On your turn, get a 2/2. Then on your opponent's turn, you Ghost Vacuum yourself and then get another thing. So that's good. But then it also just randomly hoses, like, yeah, Delirium, Graveyard, or Reanimator decks. Like,
that's That's what I keep playing against when I'm playing Reanimator.
Yeah.
I have rage conceded to turn one Ghost Vacuum at least twice this week when I've been playing Reanimator.
Like, you play the Patchwork Beastie, the one mana 3-3 artifact that can't attack or block unless you have Delirium, and then your opponent plays turn one Ghost Vacuum, and you're like, scoop him up. Like, I just mulliganed against this stupid card because I'm never going to get Delirium. And then, like, now half my deck doesn't work. But that doesn't happen all the time. Obviously, it's like a dead card against...
Red,
obviously,
white, blue,
yeah,
white.
It's like red,
there's,
white.
There's, it's got such a wide range of how good it is. I almost want to say it's sideboard only, unless you're doing stuff with it.
Yes. I don't think I would ever... it's kind of win-con-y. Like, you get to the late game, exile some stuff, and... Because if you've got a lot of removal, the problem is that so much of the best removal is exile. And so, like, it's not like you're like, I'm going to kill that good thing and then exile it. You're like, no, I'd rather just exile it with the removal that I have. And then there's not really fodder for it to get the good stuff scooped up, you know?
Yeah.
I like it. Yeah, I like it. But that's because I like Defiled Crypt Cadaver Lab. And the thing I wanted to shout out, because I had multiple people on stream this week say this, the creatures that it makes are enchantments. The 2/2 creatures that Defiled Crypt makes are enchantments. And so you kind of go off in like blue black. You could build like black white Eerie. Like you get your Eerie triggers aplenty with those cards. So if you haven't played with Defiled Crypt Cadaver Lab, would highly recommend.
I think initially, the first week we said that this just didn't do enough. Mm-hmm. And that was after playing like the All Rooms deck. The All Rooms deck just comes together so rarely. Like those decks that just have the completely inevitable end game. I do think this card does enough after playing the format more and playing with and against it.
Well, and also just like it's in that space of how good are your best cards. The higher that ceiling is, the better this card is. Because it's just
right. One
more way to get that card back.
And to be clear, like both this and Rickety Gazebo, for example, are... You're not like taking them and building around them. You're already in that kind of deck and you're like, oh, this will slot well in with what I already have, compared to something like Charred Foyer, where that's a card I'll take. And that's that power level of two cards a turn is worth like, you know, building a deck around and trying to get cheap interaction and making sure your curve's lower.
I do currently think Defiled Crypt Cadaver Lab is that level for me. That like, if I don't, you know, if I start... I don't know, removal spell, get Defiled Crypt, pick 3. I'm like, oh, that's something I can do. That's a ceiling I can attain. So I am happy to take that card early and try and maximize it. And Rickety Gazebo, much less so. That's not a card I'm taking highly, but that's part of the great thing about cards on this list is like, these are cards you get pick 9. And if you know where the home is for them, that's really powerful.
Yes. Next up, this is not a card you should get pick 9. Cursed Recording, 2 red for a rare. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery, you put a time counter on it. And if there are 7 or more time counters on it, remove those counters and it deals 20 damage to you. You tap it, and whenever you cast your next instant or sorcery spell this turn, you copy that spell, and you can choose new targets for the copy. This is, I think, the card that has the highest ceiling, probably, on this list of cards. This card is just pack 1, pick 1, build around it, slam every time. If I have a remotely reasonable number of spells, when I'll see it, I'll abandon ship and try to build around it. This card is the real deal. It's very good with cards that you can get late, like Grab the Prize. It's the 1 in red sorcery, discard a card, draw 2. All of a sudden that turns into discard a card, draw 4, which is very powerful and helps make sure you don't run out of spells.
Similarly with Final Vengeance, you only have to sacrifice a thing, exile 2 things.
Yes, but oftentimes the deck doesn't have a super high creature count. So I've run into that spot with Final Vengeance too. Much prefer the red Scorching Dragonfire and whatever, I don't know the name of it as per the episode, but 5 mana instant deal 6. If you have Delirium, flip the top card of your library.
Impossible Inferno.
Thank you. Impossible Inferno. And that also, again, helps you chain more spells together because the deck can frequently get Delirium because you're definitely getting instant sorcery in the yard. And the Grab the Prizes can let you pitch what you don't have. So it's actually kind of really good in a Delirium home as well. I think red-black is the best home for it, or the Jund Life. You can also do red-green with some of the red-green spells. It's very cool.
Are you capping your spell count in your deck with this?
No.
You're not worried about getting to a spot where you're like, oh, I just can't cast an instant or sorcery.
No, because Grab the Prize, like if you draw so many cards, having a couple of dead cards in your hand is not the worst. Also, the other thing that's really cool with is Winner's Intervention and Life Gain in black.
Have so you gotten that dealt 20 damage to yourself?
Oh, yeah. I've dealt 20 damage to myself and lived, for sure. Yeah.
Wow.
I've been lost in the sauce with Curse Recording. I'm obsessed with this card. So it's very cool with Life Gain as well. But the other thing is, I think I've played it in mostly pure control. Uh-huh. Shells where the land cyclers are really good. It's like you just kill, play a 5/6 or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And then win over attacking three turns with your opponent having no creatures on the board or whatever to your 5/6. But Curse Recording is very strong build around.
Can we talk about the land cyclers? Because I feel like you're higher on them than I am.
I'm back up on them, baby. I love them.
I don't love them. And I would like you to talk about, like, because I know when you say I love them, people will hear that and go, oh, so I should just put land cyclers in my deck. And that's not what you're saying.
No, not at all.
Okay. So, like, when are you happy to include land cyclers? And are there, do you have a power ranking in terms of the colors, like the colors of decks you end up in where land cyclers are better? I know we've talked about them in the context of Manifest Dread, of like, you want some large creatures to flip up, but I haven't actually found, like, yeah, that's like nice, but that's not, do you still feel like that's really important?
I do, yeah.
Really?
I think the white one is definitely the worst. You'd maybe only play the white one in Reanimator, maybe.
Yeah.
I like the Sultai ones all quite a bit. The red one, I have played most in Cursed Recording decks because I want to make sure I don't run out of ways to end the game. So I'll play like 16 lands plus two of the red land cycler. The other thing that's nice about them is you don't have to spend picks on them. Like, you're going to pick them up over the course of the draft, and then you just need to know when it's right to play them. For me, it's in the context of Manifest Dread. Sometimes it's if I'm a three-color deck and I need the extra boost splashing and want the threat. The black one is nice in Reanimator. It's also just nice in black decks that want the game to go long to play in place of your 17th land. 6/5 Ward is a real card.
Speaking of the black land cycler and that red spell, Impossible Inferno, this has come up multiple times. My opponents have went to kill my 6/5 Ward discard card with Impossible Inferno. They discard to get Delirium so that then they get to draw off of, which, like, so just something to think about that. I'm not that it, like, obviously then your card neutral or whatever, but that doesn't necessarily have to be pure downside.
That's cute. Yeah. Yeah. Mostly it's in, I like them in decks where I'm worried about having finishers, which is a lot of the decks that I like to draft in the format. Like, I think we're drafting different styles of decks, and the style of decks you're drafting just close the game out naturally on their own. I've been doing a lot derpier stuff than you, and I think the land cyclers are good in the derpier decks.
I'm never happy really to spend 6 mana to flip up a manifest.
Sure, but having the option is nice. And there's times when it matters, like that you can attack and your opponent knows it's a 7/6 and like they have to jump or like they have to use a removal spell on it without you having to spend the 6 mana. There's all kinds of stuff that's good about it.
And what's going on deck building wise? Like, are you like every two of them, you're shaving a land? Like,
I never go below 16 lands in this format.
Okay.
I'm much closer to being an 18 land format than a 16 land format, but because the green decks are just so mana hungry.
Yeah.
Most frequently it's just been putting them in decks with 17 lands and just making sure I don't miss land drops also, which is a nice part about them. Like having a 6 drop that can double as don't miss your third land drop. And again, this isn't best of three. I think they're significantly less good in best of one.
Right. And that goes back to when we had Andrew Cuneo on for Outlaws of Thunder Junction. You know, he mentioned like, any hand smoothing effects get much worse in best of one. And that's land cyclers are that, right? They're like that option, the fail safe of, yeah, I can go find a land if I need one. I need to do that less. Speaking of late game decks, I also want to check in on Malevolent Chandelier. 6 mana 4/4 artifact creature with flying. Pay 2, put a card from a graveyard on the bottom of its owner's library at sorcery speed. Are you playing this still?
Yeah, I'm not as high on it as I was. I'm a little cooler on it. I don't think it is an essential piece of most decks, but there are spots where you want it. You never have to spend a pick highly on it.
Yeah. Are you decking? I guess you're running 50 cards, so you're decking less.
Usually if I have a Malevolent Chandelier in my deck, it's a sign that the deck is not going to go well because it's a sign that I was screwing around rather than like trying to do good things.
I basically only want to run it in conjunction with Defiled Crypt. That's where I'm at currently. Like, I basically only, like, I'm interested in it to trigger Defiled Crypt and get a stream of 2/2s. I'm less interested in it as a let's hope I don't deck failsafe kind of card currently. I know 2-cubed Carl is back in the Magic streets. He hit Mythic rank 1 on the ladder this week. And I know that he is very anti-Malevolent Chandelier. And that has had me reflecting on my own love, or because like something happened this week. I was doing a draft video. Game 2, I decked myself and I had Chandelier in the sideboard. And I was like, all right, we're going to add Chandelier in. And then the other times, like, I got to like single digits of cards, but it never actually came to the point where I was stacking my library. I just think that situation comes up really rarely.
Yes, I would. If you put me on the spot, I would say yes, which makes me sad. But the thing that is cool about this format that I really like, which is why I've been playing these stupid 50 card decks or whatever, is like the dream is there. Like, you're not that disadvantaged if you're screwing around. Like, you can win some games and do some dumb stuff. And I really like Chandelier and those style of decks, which is why I lose when I play Malevolent Chandelier, because it's usually a sign that my draft has gone way off the rails. I've just started doing whatever I want.
So those are just some cards that I wanted to check in on. The Land Cyclers, the Chandelier. Let's get back to cards, finding the ceilings of these cards. Living Phone, the 3-mana 2/1 in white.
Stop. This card is horrible.
I don't, like, yes, it's not a good card, but also, like, do you know how many bombs with 2 power are in this format? Like, Digging Towards Ghostly Dancers, Entity Tracker, Swarm Weaver, Unstoppable Slasher, Zamone, like, whatever. And to your point about other cards, like, you don't have to spend a pick on this. You'll get this 13th. But, like, if you've got those cards, if you've got Ghostly Dancers and Entity Tracker, you don't want to find those cards more often?
You don't get to decide when Living Phone dies. Unless it's in white-black and you're playing Final Vengeance or something. And even that sounds suspect.
I guess
best.
I don't get to decide when it dies. But if it's not, if I don't have an opportunity for it to die, that means I'm being granted time to find these cards, which is what I want to do anyway. You don't have to co-sign.
I'm not co-signing this one.
Okay. Next one I want to talk about is Enduring Tenacity. This was in that draft deck that the log we went through. This is the 2BB 4/3 rare. Whenever you gain life, target opponent loses that much life. And then when it dies, it comes back as just an enchantment. Blue-black is a really good home for this because you get access to Fear of Infinity, the 1BB 2/2 flying lifelink can't block. That's nugging for 4 when it attacks. This is an enchantment that can get it back, right? Like, your Fear of Infinity is in the bin. You play Tenacity, get it back. You've got Osseous Stick Twister. You've got Fear of Lost Teeth. You've got Dashing Bloodsucker, the 2/5 Eerie +2/+0 lifelink. You put this in black-white. You get Cult Healers, pick 8, the 3/3 Eerie life gain until end of turn. Like, I don't think you want to pack one, pick one this card. It's like a similar thing where, like, there's a ceiling that you can find with this card. And if you don't have power elsewhere, I think you can get power here. And I also think, like, don't write it off. If you find yourself in that kind of lane, you can bump it up. It also makes the deal 2, gain 2 spell better, which is not a card like I'm particularly high on, Winner's Intervention. There's just quite a bit of life gain in this. And I also have the wombo combo of Sheltered by Ghosts.
Ooh,
in that
nice.
Deck. And so you're just like, hit you for 5, drain, and then 5 again from the life gain. It's big game.
Yeah, I've liked Enduring Tenacity quite a bit. I will co-sign this one. I think it's what you said. It's not building around it, but once you get it, it will cause you to play cards you otherwise wouldn't have fairly happily. And Winner's Intervention, just speaking of, I'm quite a bit higher on that than I have been. It's, again, it's got a wide range, but if you can stick it on anything, it does enough. Like, it's pretty annoying if it's in your hand and your opponent plays Bookworm or whatever and you can't kill. Right. Like, a lot of the best cards that you need to kill are X3s. But if you view it as a defensive-only card, definitely amazing sideboard material for black decks against red, white, and blue, white. Against those decks, it really shines. And you'd prefer to put it alongside ways to pitch it if it's going to be a dead card for you. So having ways to, you know, have hand selection, again, goes up in value a little bit with Cursed Recording, that type of thing. And I'm happy playing it when I've got Enduring Tenacity, which is a card you frequently get if you're black.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. It just goes around the table. That's part of this list is like, you're going to see these cards late. Like there's something to be said for that. And how do you maximize them?
Next up, we've got Funeral Room and Awakening Hall. I had a chance to play with this the other day. Funeral Room is 2 and a black. When a creature you control dies, each opponent loses 1 life and you gain 1 life. Awakening Hall is 6 black-black. When you unlock it, return all creature cards from your graveyard to the battlefield. This is powerful, having Awakening Hall to play towards. When you Awakening Hall, the game ends, and that's pretty strong. And it getting to 8 mana is not remotely unreasonable in this format. And it's actually best home is probably black-green, because the green lets you ramp towards it while also filling your graveyard.
Well, and then Rickety Gazebo is great, because it's actually one of the problems with green decks is that some of the mill doesn't let you get back. Say its name, you only get back creatures and lands. And so it's a bummer when you're building around Funeral Room, Awakening Hall, and you mill it. And so that's where Under the Skin is also really important to have in decks with this, right? Because you want ways to buy back any permanent. But you're so right. I saw this in a draft and I wasn't going to take it. And Ari Lax was like, no one has ever lost resolving Awakening Hall. I was like, whoa, that's quite a statement. And that was true. Here was a deck where I was actually really happy to play some Land Cyclers. Like,
yes,
having a way to just vomit out some 7/6s and 6/5s felt really, really good.
Yeah, and it's not Funeral Room, right? Like, maybe you'd play that in Red Black Sacrifice, but probably not even. It's Awakening Hall, and you're building towards Awakening Hall.
Well, but Funeral Room as a speed bump, as it was, again, just regurgitating what Ari said in my chat, but like, he was like, it just helps you not die on your way to unlocking Awakening Hall and winning the game.
Yeah, yes, for sure. But I also, if Awakening Hall is your win con, running it out for Funeral Hall and exposing it to
enchant
removal has been tough. I haven't liked that when I've played with it.
That's fair.
Plus, your opponent also knows it's coming then, which changes how they play.
Central Elevator, Promising Stairs. Have you won with Promising Stairs in the format?
I have not yet, but I got absolutely shellacked by it last night, or maybe 2 nights ago. I drafted a very good blue-white deck, and my opponent had a premium 5-color Central Elevator, Promising Stairs deck. It was a beauty.
So Elevator's the room that lets you tutor up a room card, and Promising Stairs is the 2 and a blue, surveil 1 in your upkeep, and then if you have 8 unlocked rooms, differently named unlocked doors among rooms you control, you win the game. This is a real win condition. If one with this in multiple decks, you really want, I mean, obviously you need a diversity, but you can also just, like, if you have 3 other good rooms, I would play this. Like, you just, because it tutors up a good room, if you get back Surgical Suite, Hospital Room, go find that, get something back, and then this is as long as other knobs are working in your deck, this is just another tick, tick, tick for your opponent, where you're like, oh, I could win a normal way, but I could also win this pretty sweet way if you don't have a way to interact with it. And cheap rooms are important too, right? Like getting Painter's Studio or, the white ones that make glimmers, like ones that are cheap to unlock. You're not dying for like Ticket Booth for the 6-mana unlock. If you're really trying to win with Promising Stairs, you would like to be able to unlock multiple rooms per turn.
And again, like, early interaction is a must when you're playing this type of card. But also, I don't think probably picking it and building around it pick 1, like, you have the cards, like, you either have the early removal, see this and think, okay, that's a thing I can do, or you've got the Smoky Lounges. Like, a lot needs to come together for this to be a great card, but when that confluence of early defense plus good rooms comes together alongside this, it's very real. But where, like, so comparing this to Awakening Hall, I would pack 1, pick 1 and just build towards. I feel slightly less good about that with Central Elevator, Promising Stairs.
I agree with that for sure. I think I want to see that a little later. Yeah, Funeral Hall or Funeral Room Awakening Hall is probably the first card on this list where I'm like, yeah, I'll pick 1 that. A lot of these other ones they're more contextual, but the ceiling is there. Where are you at on Cryptid Inspector these days in the Manifest Dreadlife? That's the 2 and a green, 2/3 Vigi grows when you play face down or turn face down permanents face up.
It's a good card. I would never cut it from blue-green Manifest Dread decks. Also, the body just lines up well in the format. 2/3 Vigilance attacks into and blocks 2/2s great, which there are a lot of. And once you turn it into a 3/4, it's very strong. I stand by what I said. It's very good in the blue-green Manifest Dread decks.
you're rocking one in your Arena Open deck right now. That's 3-0. So what more can you say? Another card I'm absolutely shocked is low in the win rate power rankings is Jolly Balloon Man. One red, white, 1/4, pay one tap to make a copy of something at sorcery speed. It's a 1/1 flyer, and then you sacrifice it in the end step. I would consider this a bomb, truly. Like, I think this card is broken. There's so many things to do. Like, so I had an opponent body me with attack in the box, because you can give that +4/+0, and then they're hitting you with a 5/1 flyer every turn. Doesn't take long for that to win the game. And then, like, whatever, Unsettling Twins, get a 1/1, and then you get the 2/2 Manifest Red sticking around. Talked about it in Red Black with Clockwork Percussionist and Fear of Lost Teeth. There's just a lot that this works really well with, and I don't get it. I would happily pack one, pick one this card.
Yeah, I've only been on the receiving end of the Jolly Balloon Man, but it has shellacked me every time I've played against it. This is the card I want to play with most in the format that I haven't gotten a chance to play with yet.
Yeah, it's really good. I'm really not sure what's going on with this card. I would encourage people to play with this more.
And just, it's what you said, just prioritizing ETB and LTB triggers.
Correct. Shouted out my love of Altanac as Rampant Growth. Also, pulling out a land triggers Defiled Crypt. Shout that out as well. I love Defiled Crypt, Cadaver Lab.
And the Saint's Name Altanac thing is real. That's happened to me. Like, you can chase that dream as well.
Mm-hmm. If you've seen the screenshots of the turn two, Say Its Name mills two other Say Its Names, and then Altanac comes in.
I have not.
Not for me, but I have seen people who have pulled off the dream of Altanac on turn two.
But again, this is not pulling you into green, right? This is
no,
not a good card. You're picking it up, I think, specifically Reanimator. It goes well there. Maybe if you've got some Terramorphic Expanses already. It's a card you have to build around to make it good. It's not an intrinsically good card.
I just more like, I think this past week I really understood, it's got like the text. It's all the way on the bottom. There's so much other text, but that ramp, the one in a green discard to grab a land out of your yard and put it into play tapped, that mode is really good in a lot of spots. And so I just feel like I had sort of not been thinking about this as much of a split card as it is.
And then once you're using it that way, then you also want ways to pull Altanac out of the graveyard, because it is a real problem once it's on the battlefield in the late game.
Right. Getting to do that early, and then later you Say Its Name it back, even if you don't get the full three copies of Say Its Name. And then you get to just cast it, because it's 7-mana 9/9 trample that if they interact with replaces itself. That is, it's a powerful card. Another card I think is really good is Infernal Phantom. Really good in red black specifically, but this is the 4-mana 2/3. It has an eerie, it's in red and has an eerie trigger +2/+0. And then when it dies, it deals damage equal to its power to any target. It's just one of the four drops you actively want in red black. You're playing Rooms, you're playing Fear of Lost Teeth, you're playing Nowhere to Run, you're playing Cracked Skull. Like, this getting to four power on your turn isn't that hard, and it is a beating.
But you'll get it late, right? I have not played this card, I don't think, yet, but I've also not really played red black yet, like a true red black sack deck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're playing more like red black control decks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing that's really nice with Infernal Phantom that Fear of Lost Teeth does as well, but like, it just plays well with Derelict Attic and Widow's Walk or whatever, the 3 in a black room that gives a lone attacker +1/+0 in Death Touch, right? Unlock that. Infernal Phantom's now a 5/3 Death Touch. They don't want to trade with it. And like, it's a real problem. And all of this is about like, what are the greater than the sum of its parts things you can do in this format? And that's one of the reasons I love it, is I do feel like you get to, it's not just about, It's always about cards intrinsically powerful on their own, but it's really about the whole puzzle you're putting together.
Yes, getting the right package in your last 7 to 8 cards that you're putting in your deck does a lot to boost the overall effectiveness of your deck.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly to that, Marina Vendrell, like, I have experimented with this card quite a bit. Frequently it ends up in 50 card O2 drops, but it can be good. I've also won with it. At this point, this is the 5-color 3/5 that can unlock Rooms, and when you cast it, you can look at the top 7, put enchantments in your hand. If you pack one, pick one it, I would say you're probably not doing it right. Like, this card flies around the table most of the time, and if you are set up, similar to Promising Stairs, if you are set up to want this kind of effect, you'll know it, and you'll take it. I don't think it is responsible to pack one, pick one, and build around.
Yeah. Okay. Makes sense.
I was shocked to see, I did scroll through the 17 lands data to try to contribute a few cards. Marina was one of them, but I was surprised to see Haunted Screen low on the old 17 lands win rate data. I've liked Haunted Screen quite a bit. I think you want all the pieces of the buffalo here. Like, you have to want to ramp to five and be five colors. Mm-hmm. But once you meet those requirements, I'm pretty happy playing Haunted Screen.
Well, and also its types, you've already mentioned a few times, like artifact is probably one of the types that's harder to come by. And so if you also care about Delirium and this being something you can just randomly mill or whatever, it's pretty good too.
Yeah. Crack Skull, we've talked about this last week. This card keeps going up and up and up for me. It's the two and a black enchant creature. When it enters, look at their hand, they discard a card. And when the enchanted creature is dealt damage, destroy it. Putting this alongside defensive speed, which is where Fear of Lost Teeth is best. I think black is just, I feel like black's got a bad rap.
Black's going to for the rest of the format.
Like, I don't think there's the way the data is. Sure.
I just don't think there's going to be an adjustment.
Well, that's fair, but I think if black's common, similar to blue, like those, you know, we talked about the draw two plus the tuck it plus the counter spell, like that package, the package of cards like Fear of Lost Teeth, Cracked Skull, Winner's Intervention, like, are they great cards on their own? No, but they help you get to the late game. And knowing you can reliably get a package of cards that help you get to the late game while interacting with your opponent is pretty valuable. And they also all help you get Delirium. I don't know. I like black's common package. And are they good intrinsic cards the way Scorching Dragonfire is? No, but they let you do a thing, and they do enable black to do that thing pretty well.
Well, and you also will get this 12th pick. You're not getting Scorching Dragonfire 12th pick.
Correct. Yeah.
And that's a boon. The last card on this list is Commune with Evil. That's the two and a black impulse, right? Look at the top four, put one in your hand, the other into your graveyard, and you gain three. This feels similar to me in like a lot of the space of cards we're talking about, like Rickety Gazebo, you know, like these, they don't affect the board, but in the synergistically, they do something. And the better your cards are, the better your individual card quality is, like the things you have to go find, the better a card like this gets.
Right. You need to have specific cards that you want to find. This is great in Reanimator. And if you're playing it, you need to want defensive speed alongside it. But I've really found an appreciation for it, again, when I'm building red-black decks with Cursed Recording, because it helps you find the Cursed Recording. Ooh. And then if you've got the Cursed Recording, it lets you find two more instants and sorceries, which is pretty nice.
Yeah. Oh, that'll deck you in a hurry right there. Mill eight cards. You definitely need 50 cards in your library then. Looking at the list of cards in this set, there are so few that I feel like I don't really want to ever run that, which is, again, just, it's such a breath of fresh air to feel like you can cook in that way. And you can just sort of see like, okay, where are the beautiful snowflakes in these cards? What are the decks they belong in?
Yeah. And I would say with a vast majority of these cards, there were a few that are just intrinsically powerful, but a lot of them are value engines that don't affect the board. And you just have to be cautious about the amount of that stuff you run, because if you're doing nothing, you're gonna lose. But all of a sudden, if you impact the board, play a removal spell, and then play a value card, then things are looking a lot better for you. I think you just have to be responsible with them and not play too many of them alongside each other. Like, that's when I really get lost in the sauce and just 0-2 or 2-3 or 1-3 or whatever is when, because I do love a lot of these cards on this list, mm-hmm. but you can't play a bunch of them alongside right. each other. You have to pick and choose your spots.
Well, and it's probably also why you and I are higher on black than maybe most, is because black really gives you, like, the things you need when you're doing those is, maybe you can ideally double spell, right? On turn four, you're playing Commune with Evil, and then you have one mana left behind. Nice to be able to stick a Fear of Lost Teeth. Nice to be able to cast a Final Vengeance, right? These cheap things you can do while you're also digging towards the things that matter or the engines that matter or whatever you're doing. That there's a lot to be said about that.
And I would, again, I'm going to shout out best of three, because if you're in best of one, I've been playing both. Like, I play best of one on my phone when I'm mm-hmm. watching TV in the evening, but when I'm streaming, I've been playing best of three for the most part, unless I have a best of one deck to finish up. you don't have to dip into these cards in best of one, because the premium cards are just flying around the table. In best of one, if your deck isn't 17 to 18 premium cards, like, you're just going to have a bad time at platinum and up rarities. But in best of three, the drafts are a little grindier, and I think you have room to try to play around with these cards and maximize them. And also, I've played many games this week and in the Arena Open even today where it's land, go, land, go, land, go, and nothing happens until turn three. That never happens in best of one, and that does happen in real games of Magic in best of three.
Yeah.
All right. I love it. Anything else before we go here?
No. Good luck to you. I hope you get the 4-0, and I'll be rooting for you in draft two.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Great place to wrap us up. Thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
You'll find all of our content on our website at lordsoflimited.com. All of our social links are there, right? We're now on TikTok. We're now on Instagram. Find our YouTube channel. Find our Twitch streams. Find our episode backlog, our tier lists, our merch courtesy of TeePublic, our Patreon page if you're thinking about joining. All of that at lordsoflimited.com.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.